accession number 20737, reel 5.
I'll probably start there, shall I?
Bill Millard, Reel 5. So you were in the hospital in Larbert, and then you got sent down to Chester.
Yep.
And that was in about July 1944.
Yeah. And then, strange enough, I was sent back to Scotland to rejoin the 5th Munsters. So when I got up there, I arrived at Ballater. I knew where I was going, actually. We were going to Balmoral, to join them at Balmoral Castle to guard the royal family because it was a shooting season. It was August, actually. Now I come to think about it, yeah.
August 44.
12th of August, yeah. Well, that date, approximately.
Roughly.
So that was really what we were doing. We were acting as beaters for the royal shoots.
Yeah. So where were you billeted?
It used to be the Prince of Wales's sort of private residence between Ballater and Balmoral. I think it's probably where he spent his days with Wallace Simpson, you know, and nights. but it was his.
Nice. Was it nice or was it empty?
Oh yes, very pleasant place, yes. But the battalion was mainly in a logging camp. Earlier on in the war, New Zealand lumberjacks had come over to Scotland to cut timber, and they built this logging camp. Wooden huts, you know, made, they built them. And the battalion was, well, headquarters company was there, but the sergeant's mess was in this, just coming back to me, we were sleeping in a stable. It was actually a stable, but it was very nice. Some of the animals got much accommodation we got or had been.
Yeah. What did they have you doing? I mean, were you guarding?
We did little local exercises. But the main thing was we took it in turns to guard the royal family. And on Sunday we would go to Clathy Church, and you will be in the choir, you know. And every weekend we had a Nuffy concert, Nuffy, or what's the other thing called?
Ensor,
that's the thing, yeah.
Who did you see there? Did you see anyone?
And the royal family used to sit on the front row and watch and enjoy the show with everybody else. And then towards the end, I knew nothing about this until it was sort of kept secret until the very end, when just before we were leaving there, they concocted a show in which the two princesses, Elizabeth and Margaret, came on the stage, and there was a mock trial for some misdemeanour, and there was a catchphrase in the battalion, because most of them came from Wigan and spoke, you know, Lancashire dialect. There used to be a joke: if you said anything, they said, "Hello." And it was a sort of joke password. And when they were being questioned, they had to, I think it was Prince Elizabeth, said, "The war!" And so, of course, everybody roared in laughter. And then, as a punishment, they had to entertain the troops. So Princess Margaret played the piano, and they both sang and received rapturous applause, of course.
Very good.
Yeah, competent, yeah.
So
I've forgotten what it was they sang.
Yeah. When you say the royal family would be sitting in the front row, who would be there?
Oh, the king and the queen and the present queen mother. She was Queen Elizabeth then. And the two princesses would normally sit with them. And the joke was, another joke, that only the officers were allowed to go to the castle and play with the princesses. Well, being soldiers, we wonder what the word play meant. Anyway, we were out on a shooting expedition one day. One day, well, we were used as beasts, I say, but on this particular occasion, we stopped for haversack rations, big hunk of cheese between two slices of bread, and I moved away to eat this, and I could hear these voices coming from out of a gully on my left, and there seemed to be some trouble going on, so I sort of crept to the edge of the gully and looked over, and down below I could see the Royal Daimler and the Royal Family having a picnic. But what had gone wrong, I don't know, but King George VI was using the most appalling language, and I mean that every word you can think of, and the Queen was there, the two princesses, but it didn't seem to make the slightest bit of difference. So I thought, well, I better get away from here, and I sort of slunk away. I thought I'll leave it to them. And
was he complaining at somebody, or...?
Pardon?
Was he complaining at somebody or something?
I think something had gone wrong. Probably he hadn't got the thing he'd ordered, the wine or whatever, or there was no whiskey or something like that. But I really was amazed. And anyway, then of course, have I mentioned about these Enter concerts?
Every weekend,
I think it was every Saturday night, we had an Enter concert, which performers just come and sing and tell jokes and things like that. And the Royal Family used to sit on the front row. That's the King, Queen and the two princesses. And later on, towards the end, just before we left, it was actually, we must have left the following day, I think, they'd concocted a show in which the two princesses were accused of some misdemeanour, and the regimental sergeant major was acting as the judge, and they were cross-questioned and found guilty, and as a punishment they had to entertain the troops, which meant Princess Margaret played the piano and they both sang a duet, and it went down quite well. Everybody gave them a cheer and a clap. So but the one of the interesting things is that there was a sort of catchword in the battalion. Being a Lancashire battalion, and particularly from Wigan, everybody, if you ask someone something, you say, "The war." And this became a bit of a catchword. And when I think it was Princess Elizabeth, was asked a question by the judge, she turned around and said, "The war," which of course brought the house down. Everybody thought it was very funny. And then the next day, we didn't leave next day. Sorry, it was the Royal Family left next day. And as they drove out through the gates, I remember the present Queen Mother was wearing our cap badge in her, still the same style of hat, but she was wearing our, and they gave a little wave as they drove out, and away they went. But just before they did leave, they took a photograph of the battalion on parade with all the Royal Family in front. So, I still got that photograph upstairs, as a matter of fact. The photograph is taken from some sort of tower looking down onto the battalion. Mm-hmm. In actual fact, I forgot to mention, not very important, but we were inspected by King George VI before we went to France in 1940.
Really?
So that was the second occasion that... And funnily enough, when I was in Dunkirk for the last celebration there, the Prince of Wales inspected us, and as he walked along, and if he'd stopped and spoken to me, I'd have said, "Well, you know, your grandfather did this 60 years ago." So, but he didn't. Yeah. He always stops every so often and has a word with somebody.
So what did you feel about guarding the Royal Family at Balmoral? I mean, were you guarding Balmoral House itself?
Yes, in case, I presume, they thought parachutists might drop and try and take them prisoner or do them...
How strong was the guard? I mean, were there lots of you?
Oh, yes, there'd be a whole company stationed all around the castle, yeah. Whole company at a time. It was a bit innocuous, nothing ever happened. And then there were these highlights at the weekend of the Enter concerts and the shoots, yeah. So...
Did they do a lot of shooting?
Oh, yes.
Every day, or...?
Pardon?
Every day or every few days?
Well, no, I wouldn't like to say, but we were there quite a long time, quite a long time. I'm not sure if we weren't there till, I don't know. We moved off down. We drove right from Scotland right down to Sussex. I know when we left there, but because what things are a bit hazy there. But I know that eventually I got tired of being. See, I'd lived in a different atmosphere, a different thing altogether. I mean, I got a bit tired of being treated like. I don't know. It was a training battalion, and it wasn't like I'd been used to. So when we got down into Sussex, I had an interview with a commanding officer who was Wills, the cigarette people, actually.
Whereabouts in Sussex was that?
Oh, somewhere around Haywards Heath.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that was the nearest place, anyway, Haywards Heath.
Do you remember Wills' name?
I don't know, Colonel's... The Winton Wills, I think.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Winton Wills, I think. And I asked, could I apply for commission? And he said yes, okay. And from there, I went off to... Not... It's called pre-op, is at Rootham in Kent, and you go through tests and interviews and things like that, and... then they decide whether you're suitable for a commission or not. And apparently I was regarded as suitable. So I made a bit of a mistake, really. I wanted to be back in my own regiment. And this meant, because it was a machine gun and mortar regiment, it was a 6 months training course instead of a 3 months, which was for an ordinary infantry commission. And it so happened, we went to Alton Towers, they send fun place now, and the lake there, I remember we had a race in assault boats over there, in which I was very proud to say my section won. We canvas assault boats, and you paddle like mad, and you land on the other side and then wade into action. But anyway, The sad thing was, I was still there in May 1945 when the war ended, and we were given the choice. We were paraded before the action, and there were a number of us who'd been in the army a long time and done a lot of service. We'd been in action in different places, and we were told, look, you can go on with your commission if you like. But if you do, you'll have to serve another 12 months. Well, I was quite a low group number, 27, and I thought, well, I want to get out. So we all said, no, thanks very much, saluted, dismissed, and we'd rather get out of the army. So, unfortunately, that was a mistake. You see, if I'd been in an ordinary infantry course, I'd have been commissioned by then, after 3 months, but I was still in a 6 month course. And... most people by then were going to the Japanese theatre of war. Lots of people were actually transferred from Octu in England to, that's Officer Cadet Training Unit, to a place in India. And the one place I did not want to go was the Japanese theatre of war. I reckon I'd done my whack, you know, done enough. We left, and I finished up back again with the 5th Mantis, back in the 5th Mantis again. So I was rather sorry that I didn't go back to my own unit. I'd have been quite happy to go back to headquarters 71st Infantry Brigade and see the war through with them. But I never went back. Mm. That was it.
Right. So you went back to the 25th Manchesters, which were where?
Where were they by then? Oh, no, I didn't. Sorry, beg your pardon. I didn't. I went back to 24th Machine Gun Training Centre. Sorry.
Right, that's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and where were they based?
Well, that's in Chester, of course. That was the Machine Gun Training Centre. And I stayed there. I was rather nice, this. They had a detachment out near Llangollen. I'll think of the name of the place in a moment. But it was a nice country house again, and a nice surroundings, and there were just a few people there, and we were all sort of old soldiers, if you know what I mean, and so were the officers there, and we got on famously. And we stayed there until eventually my turn to be demobbed. And somewhere about, I think it was 24th of April, I finished up at Ashton-under-Lyne Barracks getting my demob suit.
So what did you feel about leaving the army after all these years?
Mixed feelings, really, because, see, I'd been with these other fellas for how long? From the beginning of the war. And we'd lived together and been in the same. And then I had to leave them and I went to different places. You've made new friends and so on. But I would like, really wanted, I regret that I didn't go back and finish the war with the chaps I was with. I really regret that. And it's silly, because I might have been killed, you know, because other fellas were killed after me. I wasn't the only, I was the first casualty, but other fellas after that were killed and or wounded, etc. So
tell me about your demob. Your number came up, so you had to go to Ashton-under-Lyne.
Yeah. And
what was it like there? Where did you have to report to there?
It's the Manchester, I don't know what you call it, it's the depot, that was the word, depot, the Manchester Regimental Depot. And we just went along and we got a civvy suit, and I kept my army greatcoat, we're allowed to keep that. And of course, I had my Canadian battle dress, which I took home with me as well. And I forget, we got some sort of gratuity, I don't know, about £40 or something like that, I can't remember. But it wasn't very much. That was another thing, you see, if I stayed in, this is, I do remember this now, I'll have to, if I'd taken a commission, I could have gone to university. Now, when we were demobbed, or just before, not at Ashton, just before we were demobbed, we were actually interviewed what we wanted to do. And this was a joke. I was interviewed by a lieutenant about 22 years old. Well, I mean, I felt infinitely aged and superior to him, you know. And I said, well, I would like to go to university. Oh, you can't go to university. You're not an officer, you know. And the best they would let me do was to go to training college to be a teacher, which actually I'd never thought of at all. It was only when I was home on leave one time and I came across one of my old masters from the grammar school who asked me what I was going to do. And I told him I didn't really know. So he said, well, why don't you go for teaching? He said, you're the sort of fellow we need in the profession, which sort of... So when I went back, I said, all right, I'll go to training college and train to be a teacher. But I did really want to go to university and train to be a doctor. That's what I wanted to be.
So when you actually signed out, did anyone say thank you very much and goodbye and nice knowing you?
Well, I don't know. I came home and it's difficult, really. See, another thing that annoyed me, they didn't want people in the RAF or in the Navy, and people who were high up on the demob list, 40s, 50s, didn't want them in the Royal Navy, so they sent them, demobbed them. They didn't want them in the RAF, so they demobbed them. But they needed soldiers for garrison duty in Germany, so they were kept on and kept on. Now, I just really wasted a lot of time just messing about. After I came out of Octu, it was just a case of passing time until I was... it was all... The thing had wound down completely. And I must tell you this, that on the most emotion I ever felt about at any time was when VE Day was announced.
Where were you then?
I think I was back at the 24th Machine Gun Training Centre, I think. But the huge bonfire and cavorting about and one thing and another. And I remember standing there and I felt quite sad, really. I know why people were in, but I thought of all the fellas I'd known and people, pals who were killed and so on, you know. Because as I say, I was one of the first casualties, but I wasn't the last by a long way.
So, a few more questions here, really.
Things just keep coming back in my mind. Going back to Normandy again, you see, I wasn't there very long. I was only there probably about a week. But it was packed with incident, and I can remember one day, a jeep from the 1st Manchester actually coming along, and I don't know why they came to our headquarters, but they were really excited. They'd shot a sniper, they'd seen him up a tree, and they'd turned the Vickers machine gun on him. So, of course, when you're hit by a burst from a Vickers, you know, that's it, you've had it. And he fell out of the tree, and they got his boots there. Don't ask me why they'd taken his boots off him, but they got him out of the jeep, and as they brought him out, sort of tipped upside down, and blood, like jellified blood, you know, just fell out, flopped on the ground. I think they were going to use these boots as souvenirs, but I mean, they literally were. The fella must have all his blood just drained down into his boots, and I remember that quite distinctly.
Did people often collect souvenirs?
Well, this is how these two prisoners were caught, because I think these two Germans were caught because people were either looting or looking for souvenirs. But I never sought souvenirs, no, I didn't.
Some people did then.
Wanted anything, daggers, these ceremonial daggers and flags and things like that. But I wasn't there that long anyway. Yeah.
Did you do any sort of foraging or living off the land when you were in France?
Only in 1940, when I remember there, we lived principally off hard biscuits, about 4 inches square, hard tack, and tins of bully beef, and the ubiquitous tin milk. And we just sort of... I don't really remember meals or eating, but I do remember, oh, this is interesting, one, a lovely, beautiful place again, which had been deserted. People just went and left these places. And they'd left the most beautiful caravan, a beautiful, you know, tail caravan, and it was full of all sorts of things. I remember getting some Gauloises out of one of the drawers, but I didn't like them. I threw them away. I didn't think they were all that good. And this house... It wasn't far from Orchard. This was in the Orchard region again. And on the gatepost was a musical stave. Now, but this corporal of ours was a much older fellow than me. He must have been in the 40s. And I couldn't understand why this was the name of the house, this musical stair. But I'll cut the story short. If you say the tonic sol fa with a French accent, it's do, re, mi, fa, si, not so, si, la, ti, do, you see. And if you read these notes off, it translated as domiciladore. See? You had to read it that way. Domiciladore. Domiciladore. And they had a beautiful big room, beautiful long table, dining chairs on each side. And I can remember sitting there eating this piece of bully beef and this hard biscuit. And I thought, what a contrast, you know. This place must have seen so many banquets, and am I eating this stuff?
Goodness. So, I mean, did you sort of catch chickens or rabbits or anything?
No, nothing like that.
You were living off rations and things. Always have padres about.
Well, I'm not saying that other people didn't, but
no,
I didn't personally.
Yes.
All I know is that we usually, somebody turned up with something, we got some, as I say. But funnily enough, I don't remember eating all that much. I think we must have gone without food for quite a long time.
Mm.
I do, really. I'm not...
Just eating your rations, which you wouldn't remember.
And when we got the chance again next time, if something turned up.
Mm. What about... I mean, the army always provides a padre, don't they? And
church
parades and things.
Yeah, yeah. Never saw one in action. Right. We had one, of course, in the battalion at home here in England, but...
Do you remember his name?
No.
No, right. Yeah.
But once the war got established, and certainly at brigade headquarters, we never had church parades or anything like that. In the battalion earlier on, yes, church parade, you had to polish and everything like that and march behind the band. But I don't ever remember seeing a padre at all, no.
Well, not with any burial parties or
no,
anything, you didn't come
no.
across.
No, the only, really, this is interesting again, too. When I landed in Normandy, there were signs, obviously, there was a burned-out German tank, and the driver of it is a burned skeleton, shreds of hanging out. He's obviously tried to get out, and he's burned to death and burned away. And at the side of the tank is another German body, but it's flat because so many vehicles have run over it. You could only recognise the body because it was a German uniform. Things like that were left on, I think, to encourage us, but you never saw any dead English people. British soldiers, you never saw any of those. But after the... When I joined the Normandy Veterans Association, there was a fellow there who got a military medal. And I thought of it, I said, what did you get your military medal for? People get it for various reasons. And he told me, and I didn't realise this, that there were men sent to Normandy whose job was nothing else but to collect dead bodies. Three-ton trucks... He was in charge, a sergeant in charge of a group of men, and all they did was went along throwing these bodies into the back of a truck. Now, an unpleasant but necessary job, and I suppose he was rewarded with a military medal for it, you see. Well, yes, I would think so.
Not a lot of people want to do that, yeah.
And that's another interesting thing. British soldiers generally buried where they fell. They're like in the corner of a field, you'd find half a dozen crosses or something like that. But when I went back to Bayeux, to the cemetery there, they had collected a lot of people there, about 5,000 bodies, I think. But we eventually went on to near Cher, to where near I was wounded, and this is where our division had taken over the 15th Scottish and been involved in this battle. And there were quite a few little crosses there, both German and men of the 53rd Welsh Division.
Bill Millard, end of Reel 5. Bill Millard, Reel 6. So, we've talked about religion. I mean, being in action was obviously frightening for everybody. Did you come across people who just couldn't take it, and just couldn't go on with it?
Well, the only one I remember is before we went to France, when we were in Kent and we knew we were going to Normandy, one of our signallers disappeared, a fellow in the Royal Corps of Signals. And he was a brilliant pianist, as a matter of fact, quite an entertainer. And he just disappeared. Now, I've often thought of this as interesting. Nobody sort of cursed him or said anything about it. All right, the fellow went. And yet, today, there's such a lot of fuss about... I'm a bit unhappy they used to shoot people in the First World War. And I don't think it was right. I don't really. I don't know anybody who... Only that fellow's the only one. Now, he may have been caught and sent back, had to go and rejoin. But I never... And this was my attitude. I'll do I'll not volunteer for anything, but I'll do whatever I'm told to do. Because that was mine. I'll do what I've got to do, but I'm not going to volunteer for death.
Did you ever hear of anyone, you know, shooting themselves in the foot or anything, you know, in order to get a blighty one?
No. Okay. Oh, excuse me.
It's all right. Did you ever get into trouble at all, you know, or did you manage to keep out of trouble with the MPs and so on and so forth?
Well, the only thing I can remember once, a bit stupid, but after we came back from... after the Dunkirk episode, we were billeted. Oh,